Hello and welcome to a new episode of Blog Tales, today with Anna. I'm happy to have you here. Hi!
Thank you very much for your invitation, Sarah, and I'm so glad to see you virtually. I think last time we met in Munich.
Yeah, that's true. That was one of the conferences. What was it?
Festival of the Future, and we had this very cool exclusive club room where it was way too hot, but we pushed through.
I remember.
Moderator as always. And yes, I had a keynote on Metaverse, I think, and Web3 and everything. It was a 1 hour keynote, and I thought upfront, wow, that's way too long. Nobody wants to listen. But then suddenly time was over. It was cool. So I think we had a very great and nice audience there. And I love the Festival of the Future because it connects industry and universities and Web3.
Yeah, nice, cool. Yeah, 1 hour. I could imagine that feels like a very, very long time.
I'm not moderating
a panel. I really enjoy that role always because, like, you know, it's like you're the one asking the questions, like I'm doing it today. So I really like to be the one asking others questions.
Ask the right questions because you're an expert. This is what I always realize when I see you as a moderator. I have had the worst moderators who didn't know anything about the topic, and then it is really, really a bad panel. So it depends. So congratulations for being a great moderator.
Thank you so much. Yeah, to be honest, I really enjoy that role because, as you said, there are many things I know already, and then I can really kind of try to dig deep in certain things or really make it easier for other people to understand the topic as well. So, I'm super happy in that role. And yeah, Anna, maybe we can directly start with my favorite question. How would you explain your everyday life to your grandmother?
It's so cool. Yeah, I know your podcast, so I was a little bit prepared. And the thing is, I think I have to look back a little bit. My grandmother was always the one who told me, be flexible, child, and adapt to the circumstances.
Wow, that's smart.
Embrace transformation and be ahead of time. So my grandmother, until to the end of her 90s, was the one who was in charge of the finances.
Really?
And she was living in Venezuela. So to be honest, I think that she even then was aware that there is Bitcoin. And that's kind of, I think that's sometimes we talked about this a little bit, the power of women. In a way that if they have like the responsibility to do that, because her husband, he had dementia already, and he never did it. She was always the one in charge. And this is what she taught me a lot, to always go with the flow, see what's happening in the world. So I would just tell her, I'm exactly following your advice. This is what I'm doing every day. Be curious. Trying to adapt and be flexible. And if I then say it's something with, well, finance and art, I think she will be very, very happy.
Oh, that sounds amazing. Really cool. And really wise and smart and forward-looking what she was telling you. Like really thinking, because like, I mean, things are changing so fast nowadays. But I mean, if we go back, like, I don't know, 30, 40 years, things didn't change so fast. So I really like what your grandmother...
It depends with earthquakes. And she originally came from Ukraine, Second World War, everything. I think she also had to adapt to a lot of things a lot of times. So I think it's a little bit also the life story that made her feel that there is quite a change always happening. And she was always in that change. So there might have been stories where you had quite a settled life in one place in the world, but she was more like moving from there. And my mother was born in Austria, and then they went further to Venezuela. And so it's kind of a lot of things happened always. And maybe this is why she was in this way a very modern woman at the very early stage, working and everything and making her own money also.
Wow, nice. Yeah. I think this is like, this seems like a whole story on its own.
Yes, it is. I think so too.
But, and I'm pretty sure it would be super interesting to talk about her as well. But let's kind of start with your story, because I think, as far as I know, and I know only little, but I'm super curious about your story, because I see you on so many events, on all the panels. I think the first time we met, it was something related with NFTs. So I think you're super deep in that space as well. But yeah, I'm really curious. So please, how did everything start for you? What was your like first touch point? And yeah, why did you decide like, oh, I want to work in that space? Because yeah, still not enough women are working in that area. So
And it was, we talked about this even crazier in the beginning when the hype started. Most of the times you were the only woman in the room. I guess it was the same for you. And yes, from my side, it started with digital art, which is kind of the easiest way to explain why NFTs make sense. Because before you had NFTs, you had a paper certificate with your digital artwork. And that is kind of a... yeah, very, very strange thing. And I was lucky to meet Johann König at a very early point on Clubhouse and started working at the König Gallery, who was really the first gallery in Europe to sell NFTs through Shopify, which made it possible to not only pay in crypto, but also in fiat money. And that helped us not only have an audience of this NFT bubble collectors, but also bring the normal collectors of art into the space, because we launched some of the projects from very, very popular traditional artists like Erwin Wuhr made his first NFT with us. We even had Refik Anadol, who's very, very popular in digital art. Still, some like you say, yeah, there's this bear market, but like for some artists, this really doesn't count because they are still selling for a lot of money and they have established themselves. So it's kind, I would say, of the normal cycle in the art world, you have this 1% of artists who really make it, mm-hmm, and the others struggle. And it's nothing different with NFTs, because NFTs are not a part of the art. It's just a way to sell them and give them authentication, a certificate, or something like you have more provenance, more transparency, but the artwork is still digital art, which then has like the generative art, which is mostly sold as an NFT. So people, I think they have to distinguish it a little bit better, because it's not like NFT art. NFT is a technology, it's a non-fungible token. And yeah, I think we met for the first time in Frankfurt through I think 2022 or 2021. Okay. I guess it was 2022 at my first CAC.
Interesting.
Okay. Probably, I guess.
Have you been working with the art or in the art space before? Or did everything kind of start with blockchain?
No, that started I knew a lot of digital artists who were not working as artists, but more in the field of being a designer, mm-hmm, at an agency. And you couldn't make money with that really before. So that was kind of the crazy move. My husband owns a design agency, so this is why
there's
a connection. And no, but they were kind of forced to do like this agency work where they wanted to do something else. And it was crazy to experience, like, I think it started like end of 2020, beginning of 2021, how suddenly people who were working at some companies, well, as a sidekick, they started doing NFTs and made money. That was kind of life-changing. This is interesting. I live in Hamburg, and especially also from the Hamburg community, there are really a lot of people who also put a lot of effort. It's not easy. At some point, you might have been lucky, but for most to really push through, it was a lot of work, a lot of not sleeping during the nights, and then having to do the taxes. That was the worst part. I still remember this. Oh my God, I sold this for 200,000. I don't know how to get all the money to pay my taxes, because you cannot pay them in crypto. And so we had a lot of funny discussions on this side as well, especially in Germany. I still remember this. And same thing then also, of course, what was another life-changing thing at that point was royalties. suddenly galleries couldn't just buy your stuff for a very, very cheap price and then sell it for a high price. No, you had royalties. Okay, then it suddenly changed again. But in 2021, it was super clear. Okay, you get your 10, 15%, whatever it was on the secondary market. And for many projects, that was a very good passive income in the end.
Interesting. Let's quickly go back to the taxing, because is the taxation for NFTs exactly the same like for crypto tokens and coins? Like if you hold them for 1 year, you don't have to pay any taxes, or is it different?
Yes, but this was in some cases not possible because they were not buying and selling them. They were minting them as an artist. So it's income. And this is the income tax you have to pay at that part. Wow. This is what I understood. No legal advice. I'm not a tax consultant, but this is what we kind of figured out at that time. So that could go up to 50%.
Wow, crazy. Okay, got it. And so then you kind of decided, okay, I want to work for that gallery. I want to kind of work full time in that space. And then you really dig deeper in the NFT space. But now you're also in many other areas and fields. So what happened?
Well, that was the thing. It's not like that. It's I got this offer from Avato Systems, which is part of the Bertelsmann Group, last year. And for me, as I said, like really embracing this kind of transformation, I thought there's a lot more to discover in Web3 than art. Art is a great thing and was great to learn about assets and finance and legal and everything. I think that gave me really a solid way of talking about NFTs and everything. But talking about the whole topic of Web3, I see there's a lot more, and it's kind of a complete horizontal infrastructure that touches all verticals that we have in our company. And that goes from public health to industrial midcaps to consumer products, media. And this makes it super interesting. And also still I'm into art and culture, luckily. So I have many, many options, and I'm kind of an ADHD person, and this helps me like always discover new things and being curious, and then still finding a way of how can you implement, like what is the bottleneck, what is the product that we can build out of it, because you get a lot of input. And for Web3 at the moment, especially consumer products, we really figured out that we can be a bridge between Web2 and Web3 for loyalty, for example. And I think this is kind of what I also would see in myself, is this bridging of the in old and job? The new world.
In your current job?
Yes. My current job, I mean, about the systems, we are for the Bertelsmann Group, which is also like...
Maybe you can explain a little bit.
But Bertelsmann, many, I think in Germany, some people know it internationally. If you say that name, nobody knows it, but it's one of the biggest media groups worldwide. It's an old company. It's still family owned, and it started with books, and many people still know a book club that was Bertelsmann, and that Bertelsmann was in the past. And now they are the biggest media company in Europe, because RTL Group belongs to them, BMG, also Penguin Random House, the biggest publisher worldwide. And then we have the services, and this is basically the Avato Group, and then the investment department, which might be interesting to talk about a little bit later, and also the education group. So it's really a wide range of different companies, only to name a few, because we also have like influencer agencies and a lot of things. So basically, if you need somebody to help you with a job, you will probably find it within the Bertelsmann Group. So this is a super cool thing that you can always look into the different divisions. And for Web3, it was super cool for me to start there, since we have a leadership circle. And the leadership circle consists of one or two people from each division. And then we could talk about synergies and what we can do all together. And that was super cool for the last month, to also work together with a bigger consultancy and really create like a handbook of how to do metaverse and Web3 in our company. Yeah.
How big is the whole metaverse Web3 blockchain team approximately?
I would say it's like a most, if you look into corporates, it's a few people that connect. It's more like a virtual team. My role as a consultant is more to look like internally and but also into external companies of how to build a Web3 or metaverse product or both connected, and then advise them into the right direction, because it's different. If you just want to do a one-time event, it's different from what I always prefer, implementing it into a long-term strategy. I mostly work together with the marketing department. Mm-hmm. It's always best for every NFT project in a corporate to have marketing and legal on board. This is like, then 90% of the cases go well. If you don't have them on board, I can kind of guarantee you it will not work.
And so you said your role is kind of a consultant or a consultant?
I'm a strategic consultant, yes.
So but to be clear, are you working mainly for the Bertelsmann Group, or do you do the consulting for every corporate company that is kind of interested to explore the metaverse, to explore NFTs, and then they can kind of call you and you really do consultancy, so more or less internal or external?
Yeah, and the funny thing is Bertelsmann is a super decentralized group. Really? So it's kind of like every division is like an external client. If it's not for within Arvato, they can also, like, you don't have to work with somebody in the system. You can also work with someone from without the outside of the system. So it's kind of always working for external clients in that way, but integrating the existing portfolio of Arvato to create products that also fit into Web3. For me, Web3 metaverse is mostly an extension to existing marketing strategies in a company. If we don't, or supply chain solutions, which is kind of a different part of it. Also like staking, like telecom, this is the staking part. So they are super different from most of the other companies. But I would say for over 80% of the companies, it's part of the marketing strategy to launch Web3 loyalty, integrate this into existing loyalty programs. And then, you know, we have to integrate it into their CRM. So it's very cool that SAP is also now going into this direction.
What are they doing? Can you?
They have a launch pad for NFTs now. So they have done their first tests with Chibo. And that was a great one. They had an internal project for over a year where the employees could participate on different events. And you got NFTs for that as rewards for participating in these events. And then you could win the golden package. And I think it was a box and some other merch. It was very, very well done. And I have to say that the solution from SAP, it works within seconds. It's super, super easy. And it's directly integrated into Amasis, a product also from SAP, mm-hmm. where you have your customer relationship management. So yeah, it's kind of a solution that is understandable for corporates. Mm-hmm. I think this is still the thing that for many projects, the UX...
It's hard.
It's hard and complicated, and you have to own a wallet. It's not that easy email thing. For SAP, you can start with your email, and then you can just say you want to claim it, and have it in transferred to your wallet, and both things just it really works. As I said, I had 1.5 minutes for the whole process of clicking on it until I had it in my wallet. And this is quite a good time. And it was super smooth. It didn't go to my spam.
That's nice.
Yeah, it was a nice user experience. And I think this is always what we're looking for in Web3. Same thing, what we're building for loyalty is just an app that's a very, very simple app. You don't even have to register there. It just works with the QR codes. And you know, QR codes are kind of a scammy thing in most NFT conferences because they make fake QR codes, and then people get scammed because they connect their wallet and then all your stuff is gone from that wallet. So putting an app in between that verifies the code, and then you can lead to whatever. You can give them an NFT, a physical, a coupon. It doesn't even matter. But like this, you can also create different touch points. And I think this is the most interesting part, because nowadays, if you look into retail and brands, what do you want to do? You want to reach the client where he or she is.
Sure.
For most people, this is still like going to the shop, but the younger the generation gets, they are used to this COVID times where you have to stay in the so-called metaverse, which might be Fortnite or Roblox for Gen Alpha. So it depends. And brands really have to consider that there might be new customers that will spend more time in a virtual world, whatever that is. It might also be TikTok, whatever, and create new touch points where they incentivize people to still connect with the brand. And I think this is the most interesting part, where Web3 also, with the interoperability in the end, helps us to always connect with the customer no matter where they are.
Interesting. So
or something like that ever? Have you like ever done this gaming part? Because then you really feel why this could be necessary. I collected so many skins in Fortnite. I will never be able to sell them. I will never be able to give them to somebody else. And this is really a thing in the digital world. In the past, we used to, or still, gamers sometimes still buy DVDs or Blu-rays.
Really?
Because then you can resell them after. Yes, I know people who don't like to do that online because they say, if I play the game once. Well, this is also what Avatar Systems is doing, by the way. We have a supply chain and we sell a lot of these games still and ship them. So we are into logistics.
I didn't even know that this is still existing. But
yes, it does. Because of that reason, because they know like there are games that you will play once and then you will never play them again. So what you do with them, when you pay just online for a digital version, you can never resell it.
Right.
And there, Web3 really offers a solution, not only for gaming, but also for movies. And Warner Brothers is doing this with the Movieverse right now. And I so love the solution, because when you were collecting movies as a DVD or Blu-ray, you had to store them somewhere.
Can you explain what they do, what they are building, what their product is?
Yes. I'll come to it. But you had like this big storage of DVDs or whatever. Who wants that? Like, really,
nobody.
Who wants it? It's only like there's dust and everything and you have to clean it. And well, in the end, it's somewhere and you never look at it again. So why should you buy that? But when you buy it on Amazon, okay, you pay like the same price. You can watch it whenever you want. Amazon promises you to keep it forever, whatever. I know. I'm not sure, because when they say like, no, for your region, it's not available anymore, then it's done either way. So Warner Brothers now has this digital library that is really based on blockchain solution with Alluvio. And you can build your library in a very nice way. It looks super nice. And you can resell it if you want to. You can also move it to your own wallet. They offer you a custodial wallet so that you only need email access. You can pay with crypto or credit card or Apple Pay. I think they have many, many options. And then you kind of build your virtual library with movies. And you have so much content there. Like, I think for a lot of the Rings, they have 16 hours extra. And of course, they have this gamification part that many people from the Web3 know. You get a different cover that might be common or uncommon, but it's not only a cover anymore. It's like the whole 3D world that you enter through the screen that looks different then and tells you a little bit of a different intro story when you open it. So, and yes, secondary market is working. And I think you pay $30. Like as you did for Blu-rays, and you can resell it for about 10 to 15. So it's the same thing like with physical assets in the past. That's very, very interesting. And I think a great solution of finding something that makes sense for Web3.
I think especially Web3 can help a lot with the secondary market. I mean, this is like an amazing example that you just explained, but there are so many other things where Web3 really can help. Reselling things, reusing things, making more use out of things, where Web3 can really, really help. So I have another question, because if you go to customers, and so how far are they with their Web3 process already? So if you go there, they are like, I have no clue, please help me. Or is it like, I want to have NFTs, I want to have the metaverse, and they knew already exactly why they want to have or why they want to build something? Or is it like they are super open and like, please just give me a strategy and help me with this? So on which level are you operating?
Yes, I would say it depends on the people you're talking to. If they already have a metaverse, a Web3 team, it's more of the last thing. It's more about thinking of the overall strategy, of really how to get the project going, where can you connect things, what do you have to think about. But there are also people who still think that the metaverse belongs to Meta. So,
Oh, really? Okay.
So, yes. And it was even a small company, but this guy was super sure that, yeah, no, this is the Meta thing. So we still have a wide level of, I think, different knowledge about what it is, what it means, or people who would say Web3 doesn't even exist. Give me a definition of that. This is just all hype words and there's nothing about it. So I think we start at different level. And you were talking about all these conferences. I think the hardest thing is to know who is your audience. Because sometimes I feel like I'm starting at a too low level. And then it still wasn't too... Then I still realized, no, it was like people come to me and, oh my God, it was so good. I learned so much. And it's always interesting of... Yeah, how different the expertise is. Also with, I mean, for people who invest in crypto and venture capital or family offices, it is super interesting to see that for some this is really like news. Oh, wow, you can get new liquidity through tokenization of assets. Crazy cool, never heard of that before. It's interesting. We're looking into that, but we need partners. We are already doing that. It's
interesting.
Really like this.
Different kind of range. So yeah. Really, maybe on the metaverse topic, because I think there was like a huge hype similar to NFTs, and now we are in a bear market at the moment. But nevertheless, like metaverse, what I experience is like in an even a little worse of bear market, because people are like, oh, this is what I experienced, but I'm super happy about what you are telling us. So what are your customers doing? How do you experience things? What is happening in that space at the moment?
Yeah, I think it is a lot about what you think of the metaverse. If you think Decentraland, I never used it. It's for me, I never understood it was kind of just money making by buying real estate.
And one of the projects many people know, you know, and this is like you said, you never use it. It's like, it doesn't seem to mean a lot for you, but this is one of the projects people know. So what's happening?
Yeah, people know, but nobody uses it. Look at the numbers. This is just the thing.
They are all know, you know, this is what people from an outside perspective, there is like Decentraland. It didn't work. There are no users. And then it's like, okay, end of knowledge. So yeah. What is really happening in that space?
Yeah, I think it's a lot about the definition. You ask people and everybody has kind of a different definition. If you really look into the term metaverse, it's from a book from the 90s and it's a very dystopian thing and we might not even want that. So for me, it's a lot more about virtual experiences. I mean, Apple already renamed it to Spatial because of Meta. So it's quite interesting. So what are we talking about, right? And for me, it's just like you have different stages. And the first stage is augmented reality. And this is also the most mature stage of virtual experiences at the moment because everybody uses it. Everybody uses a filter. Everybody knows Snapchat. And it has become very intuitive to just put a filter to make your lips bigger or to just have lipstick on your lips or have a different background, or you can be a cat, whatever. I mean, we even have avatars now in Microsoft Teams. It's true. You know, it's even in the corporate world, this seems of kind to be accepted, like augmented reality. Yeah, that's a thing. Mm-hmm. And this is like the first step into maturity. The next one will be mixed reality. And I think we are all waiting for the Apple Vision Pro. This is for me the asset that will hopefully bring the hardware for mixed reality. And the last step is virtual reality. And we all know the goggles at the moment. what shall I say? For me, the experience is, it's okay. And it might be sometimes like, oh my God, I'm standing on a tower looking down and now I'm getting dizzy. But I don't know. I think there are very few people who really use it regularly. It's kind of an event thing for most of the people, I think. Some use it for gaming, yes. But in the business world, I think it's not like for the mass market, except for industry purposes with the HoloLens from Microsoft, where you already have this mixed reality and can also do trainings. There it is something that is really, really useful because you don't have the machine there and you can already learn about the process and what to do. And when the product finally arrives, you can immediately start working on that one. So where it makes sense, that the people will use it. And this is like with all products. When they solve a problem and it's not just there for the technology, it will be adapted and people will buy it. And this is what I hope a lot for mixed reality, because it would help me so much to just wear, I would prefer sunglasses. If it comes to the level where it's really only sunglasses, yeah, I'm sure, yeah, I will wear it every day, because then I have to reason to wear it all the time. At the moment, it's kind of cringe when you run around with sunglasses all the time, but I love to wear sunglasses because I like to see the world through sunglasses. It's always, I love it. It's a warmer light. And I would run around with sunglasses like all day long. And in this moment, I get really information in front of my eyes that is useful for me.
Yes.
And this is what I see as one of the great goals and purposes for mixed reality. And why wouldn't you call this kind of the metaverse? It is another level of experience that you add to the reality that you can experience with your eyes. So you can name it whatever you want. As I said, you can call it virtual worlds. For me, this is the same thing on what we are working on when we talk about metaverse.
What are the biggest hurdles and obstacles from your point of view at the moment to really get there? And what is your estimated time until we kind of really have that in our everyday life? Do you have
illegal and getting money for these projects? Because I would say C-level is still very, very hesitant about everything where the name Web3 or Metaverse comes up. So
let's rename it.
Exactly. I would suggest, well, at some point, you maybe have to be honest and say, yeah, there is some different technology on that. And we can't have, yeah, the problem is at some point you might need a wallet and infrastructure.
Got it.
So you cannot completely hide it, right? you can use other wordings, but then there is also, since it is a new technology, a different infrastructure.
But then we are coming back again to the topic of user interface. I mean, as long as things are difficult and hard to understand and to use, it's because a wallet is not a problem itself. A wallet is getting a problem if it's hard to understand, if it's hard to use, if it's hard to kind of adapt.
Yep, and this is why I like working together with startups, and this is also why Warner Brothers did it with Illuvio. This is why Mattel is having a partner from a startup, and it makes it a lot easier. Then you have Porsche was also doing it with an agency, right? This is why they also created now Porsche Digital to just like have the resources to do the things, because still it's complicated to accept crypto in a corporate company. That's just the way how it is. So it's easier to receive fiat money in the end, like euros, dollars, whatever, and have that swapped at an earlier stage. And this is also like the great opportunity for startups at the moment, I would say, to really make it corporate friendly and offer the services that are necessary instead of building dream castles of someday everything will be decentralized and we do not need cloud technology. Well, cloud technology is one of the most important factors of having enough data. This is, in my opinion, totally underrated, that we need the cloud, and that without the cloud, you would still be in the year 2016. When people always ask, like, yeah, all these ideas were already there in 2016 and 17, and it didn't work at that point. Yeah, because we didn't have the cloud. And now it's a lot easier to transfer data and information. And without this, we will never be able to even experience anything that is like metaverse, because still in Horizon, they don't have even legs because of the data.
And
Yeah, of course. It's like, wait, this is the huge problem. If you look into really nice looking metaverses like Journey, they are super expensive because, you know, they have this technology where you have to stream with every pixel, and this makes it super expensive and not so many people can join at one time. The easier you make it from graphic side, like gaming wise, etc., it's not like this photorealistic anymore. It doesn't look like super polished. So at the moment, you still have to decide, what do I want in the end? How important is like photorealism or super like clean graphics using Unreal Engine? Or maybe, yeah, Roblox, Minecraft works with a lot more people at one place and mostly on every device. So at the moment, we still have to decide what you want. But as I said, I think that cloud will help us a lot to get there and achieve what we want to achieve, like this new kind of experiencing the world in a different way and being whoever we want and all this nice. I always like to think of it in a utopian and not in a dystopian way. But of course, there are challenges. And then we need digital identities. And so it comes back to Web3. How do we identify ourselves in the metaverse? So there is many, many reasons why Web3 is a good solution in many cases. This has not to be underestimated. Also for money transfers around the world, we have seen that with Ukraine. I was working for the WWF as the first NGO who really had an NFT project. And I still remember how hard it was to, how do we do that with crypto? And it was done through a stablecoin at that point. And now there's this company, Aiddrop, who's helping NGOs to receive crypto, which is a super good use case, to be honest, because there is a lot of crypto. They could never accept it. But if you want to do good and if you want to help NGOs, and they can be more transparent. You know, there's always this thing, a lot of NGOs had trouble with, oh my God, where did that money go? Where did this go? And on the blockchain, it's super transparent and you can see where the money went.
I like that use case. I've never thought about that, but now that you mention it, this is amazing. Yeah. Because if you want to give some money to certain projects, I'm super skeptical, to be honest.
Exactly. Yes.
I've heard so many bad stories about it. Like, I don't know, 80% is going to people only working for the company and only 20% of the money is really used for kind of helping people or animals or projects or whatever. But this is like an amazing thing that you can really see where your money is going. And then I think a lot of people would be a lot more positive on giving money to certain projects if they were sure that the money is really used for a positive reason and not for any overhead topics.
Overhead or even worse, going into regimes that are really bad to the military, whatever. It might be worse than just going into the infrastructure of the NGO.
Amazing.
Oh, yeah, and this is why
I've learned a lot today.
And I hope hopefully this is like my intention to give at least value and show that there are use cases, because so many people still say, oh my God, this is super irrelevant and you can all of this do this with a database, blah, 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 blah. No, but some things are useful to be transparent and to be decentralized.
Absolutely.
And this is also the power where I see a lot of power for DAOs. DAOs as a structure besides NGOs, or maybe NGOs that are DAOs, this is, I'm still thinking about it, because they develop a great power within a short amount of time. Long term, I'm not so sure, but if you have a simple and easy way of doing a DAO, and I hope that Estonia is finding a way, because I think they are really working on these projects, to find it in a legal way, you can put a lot of power through governance token into this DAO and do something good. I have seen this with Redemption DAO for Africa, where they wanted to sell the land to the oil companies. And then this DAO, it was crazy. Within 2 days, they had so much media power, so many people working on this together. And it facilitates the way of working together on one thing for a good purpose or whatever. I think this is just a new way of agile working together could be placed in a DAO to have a legal infrastructure. Because I had this a lot of times. I told you, like, I have a lot of ideas. And then at some point, it was always, oh my God, we have to put this into a legal structure. And in Germany, you then do a fine normally. Okay, yeah. This is like, then no, we don't want to put the money for GmbH, then we do a fine. And this is like a very interesting if you could just lower that hurdle through a DAO structure where you don't have to go to the bank, to another person, register in a very complicated way, do all of this online, collect people through token. Maybe they have a soulbound token where they can make sure that they are participants of this DAO. And the government can see who is participating. This is, again, the thing of transparency. Because in the end, we're talking about taxes. And of course, they have to pay taxes too. So if you have this more transparent, I think it's a win-win situation for everybody. And it could be a very, very good way for NGOs or smaller NGOs. So if you just, as I said, want to do something good, you were talking about Diana, who was in the last episode with Women DAO, just collecting people for a cause and bringing them together and trying to give them some power for an I see that it works best for, like, if you think of 6 months or so, it's like, and then they all get lazy and they don't want to work on it, and it's mostly like 3 or 5 people who do the job. But I think for some months, it's like, you know, with most relationships, for some months you are high on adrenaline. And it's the same when you go into a project. This is also why this hype in 2021 lasted exactly, I think, 9 months. It is this natural cycle of humans to get excited. And then it
stops.
Exactly. Everything. It's always a cycle. It's always like, and if the relationship then lasts.
And then you have to do something that the cycle isn't dropping too low.
Exactly. Yeah.
Interesting.
But as I said, this is like a natural, and I'm still thinking about, but also implementing DAO structures in corporates could be interesting for incentivizing employees, for example, as well as with loyalty reward programs, both things that could be very interesting. And that
internal and external, because I think most companies think about external things like customer rewards and customer loyalty programs. But you can also, like you said, you can also use it for internal rewards and for making internal new structures for people to give certain incentivizes or incentives to work in certain projects and things.
12 by 12 is doing this with Universal, I think, because there you have, like, for the whole music space, you know, you have the stars and then they get their reward, and everybody who's been working with them is kind of going without anything. And now they get NFTs for working on this project, so that you have your NFTs in your wallet and you see which project you have participated on and can be rewarded for this as well. For the next episode, I don't know if you have ever had Anna Ladyshinsky on the podcast here. Otherwise, this is my recommendation to look more into also what you can do with employee branding in Web3 and how this all can work. It's just a super interesting space. This is why all, like, the big four and Accenture, etc., also went into the metaverse. For how do you get new employees? How do you keep them? I mean, it's so super easy at the moment. If you really like one of the top people, how long do you stay in one company? If you get a better offer, you will leave. Do you get the people back? Can you invite them? Can you incentivize them, even if they have left, to get them back? I think this is very interesting, like, to have a track record and also CVs. It's so, like,
so old school.
I had this, like, there was a poll on LinkedIn. What does it even mean anymore? And I think if you have a track record, like this, as I said, like interoperable, where you can prove, like, I did this for this whole, I had that, all the events, and you have proof of attendance for these events, I think it might be quite interesting to figure out in a more realistic way of who this person is.
Yes, because then, like you said, proof of attendance, or also proof of working in a certain project, or not only working, but being successful with a certain project, I think that would be so much better, because CVs can be faked easily. And then with a nice user interface, again, coming back to the topic, it would be, it's even a part of kind of gamification. If you then have like a nice app or a nice interface, you can log in, you can even see your own CV. You're maybe motivated to kind of, put in some new projects, kind of work on things, maybe do some extra work, maybe do some work for NGOs or something like that. So it can even encourage people to work on different things, and really, because then you know that somebody is seeing what you are doing, because quite often people work on things, but nobody's seeing it and nobody's saying thank you or something like that. But super interesting. I like that.
Or everybody's a speaker without ever having spoken anywhere. I see this on LinkedIn so much. It's crazy. They don't have any posts on that, but they say speaker.
I know what you mean. And or the other way around, you have been speaking on many events, but it's hard to, you have those recordings, but then you have to have the links, and then you have to copy the links, and then you have to send it to the new, event, and the person who's organizing it. You can't just send him kind of access to your identity or whatever, and then he can kind of exactly see where you have been speaking. And so it's like,
Sarah, we need a token for every event we attend, right? Every podcast, every event, every article, and then we have a really cool track record.
This is working on this.
You know what? I think that we should do that, by the way, some kind of platform, because as I said, with a media company, we already have all these communities together. And the good thing is that RTL, my colleague at RTL, who also did the CC NFTs, he's so much into this. It's so cool to work with him. So as I said, there are already a lot of ideas and synergies, and making the user interface nice is kind of what we at least can do. This is good. So that because I'm always very like, I want a nice user experience. This is
totally.
It should be like super simple and easy. Exactly. Yeah, okay. But this is something, we should just do it to have it for us, right?
I like that idea.
I will pitch that one.
Maybe you should start working on it. I mean, you know, the whole digital identity is like a huge topic. But this is like a very tiny but clear,
it's a niche.
Interesting. Yeah,
like
it's
art.
Yeah. Maybe let's start working on that.
and also we can connect this with the metaverse because we were talking about there are not enough female, also not enough female speakers. And I think the reason for that is that many are kind of intimidated to speak in front of so many people. And this is something a friend of mine, he was like, what if you trained it with the VR glasses? Just speaking, first you start with a small audience and it becomes bigger and bigger, and you don't have to be in front of real people. But this is something that you can extend. And it was super interesting for one of the conferences that I was curating for the first time in September in Hamburg. They were really like, they said, okay, we will have like 4 speaking opportunities up front just for female speakers so they can train themselves in front of other people. Nice. So it is a real thing. And I think it does not only go for women. I think there are also a lot of introvert men who might have a lot to say, but are just not like, okay, I do this. Like, I mean, for us, it has become quite natural. You know, you say you feel very comfortable and very confident sitting there, moderating, hosting a stage, but I don't think it's a natural thing.
No, it's not. And even for me, like I started doing this more or less exactly 1 year ago. So in September, Demexco 2022 was like my first time being on a stage. And I was like, so excited. And I was like, oh my God. It was really, really like, I think 1 hour before I was like so super nervous. I was like, oh my God, am I really going to do this? And you know, like we met in the background, and like everybody else was coming like, hey, oh, nice to meet you. Oh yeah, let's do that. I was like, oh my God. And now it's not normal for me as well. But like you said, the way it happened was totally fine for me. But of course, it would be a lot easier if there would have been like a smooth way to kind of end that.
But tell me, as a child, because now coming back to the blog Tales, were you a lot on stage already because you were playing an instrument or something? Or were you the person who was always first to present? Or did that really totally change?
To be honest, I was one of the person always being, so presenting was never a problem for me. Yeah, that's true. So
this is exactly the same thing for me. I was kind of pushed to the stage at a very, very early age. I was singing, I was participating in competitions, etc. So I think for me, I was kind of trained from very, very early stage and age to do this. And I don't know if it's natural. I think it's always a learning process. And this is why it might be very helpful, because I don't think that there are, I would say for at least 60% of the people, you can learn how to do this and you will feel comfortable after a while. Yeah. And also for me, I have to say every time that like no summer break and when I go back on stage again, I think I will be nervous for sure. Okay. Because it's like, okay, oh, you haven't done this in a while. And I always have this kind of nervousness that you might not see. Because before I went to the DMX school, which was also a very cool stage, I was at the OMR, at the blue stage.
Oh, wow.
And the blue stage is the one in this huge hall where there's also the food and everything. So I was in there and it was kind of overwhelming. And my colleague, she was crying. And I said, this is very unprofessional. I'm sorry. How can you be so calm? I said, I am not calm. I am just super focused right now because I have to listen to the speaker before us. So because he's also, that was Theo Pham at the time. And I said, we have to listen to him because it's important. We might have to adapt a little bit in our speech to, the speaker before, etc. So for me, it's always super important to also listen very closely to what's going on the stage before. This is one of the tips that I always have to offer. So that you kind of feel the audience a little bit better. And then going on stage is always entertaining as well. You have to entertain the audience. And I like to have the direct connection and see them as well. I'm not one of those people who likes to look over the heads. I like to look into faces and see how they react and that they're hopefully not only looking at their phone. Which happens. It happens.
I know.
It's like it is. You know, you cannot please everybody. This is also a good learning that you do not have to like take yourself too seriously. You're just a human being like everybody else. Some people will like you, some people will not. But I think at least to see what value makes sense and where should you maybe go a little bit deeper into. And this is why I never script. I have a presentation, but I think it's always very important to do this freestyle kind of thing and never script your speech in a way. This feels very unnatural and
Yeah. Anna, we are getting close to 1 hour already.
You can cut everything.
No, I don't want to cut anything. But it's so funny because we started that you told that you had been on stage for 1 hour and time flew. And now we have more or less exactly the same situation. And there are like so many things. And I really enjoyed talking to you. But I think we should come to an end. And as it is Blog Tales, do you have like any last fairy tale, any last story you want to tell your our audience about your experiences or anything that just came into your mind?
You know what? One of my favorite experiences was the Adidas drop in 2021. The same day we were closing our auction at the gallery for Rafik Anadol, and I had convinced OpenSea to get the front page for 7 days because I promised them that we would sell over 1 million. And with the Adidas drop, everything broke down. OpenSea was next accessible anymore. And I was talking to them. I was like, oh my God, guys, this is closing in like 15 minutes. And you know, this is the most important moment for an auction, is the last minutes when people start bidding. And I think we were at 300K or something. And they were like, yeah, our engineers are working on that, but I think we will not fix it until tomorrow. And I was like, what? It was crazy. So we had to extend the auction for 16 hours. I didn't sleep at all. We had to kind of keep the bidders going and excited. And that was my Adidas moment. I couldn't buy Adidas in the first minute because of that. I had to buy it a little bit later at the totally overpriced pricing. But it's still one of the projects that I like to follow and that I have also kept, because they are going this way from just being an NFT for the NFT bubble guys to now integrating it into loyalty. And in the end, we sold for over $1 million. So it turned out to be a happy and good story for everybody. And the artwork also went to Centre Pompidou. So it was a really, really nice story in the end. But it was this kind of FOMO. It doesn't work right. How do you solve the problem? And all within a very short amount of time. Super exciting. You like adrenaline was super high and it all went well. So it's one of my favorite stories still, because it kind of connects everything what the space was, kind of still is, and how worlds collided in this moment because of a total coincidence. And it was crazy. And still, I follow both projects, and it's one of my favorite artists still. So yeah, everything turned out well. This is my fairy tale story of, in the end, everything will be fine in one way or the other. Yes. You can now say, oh my God, you paid for 5,000 euros for a hoodie. But I would say it was a great learning for me, and I can take it as this great learning. And I hope to see many new things from Adidas still coming and developing. And yeah, stay curious, ask other people, learn a lot. And as I said, I gave you my recommendation for inviting somebody. I think this is always a nice thing. Like I love to recommend other people that I know from the space, and especially if it's other women that I admire. So Anna Ladyshinsky, my clone, because people sometimes think that because it's Anna and they don't really check LinkedIn.
I mean, I know her, sure, but I don't know. I haven't. We haven't had her, so I will definitely contact her. Cool. Anna, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts and knowledge. Thank you for having you. It was amazing. It was really, really interesting. And yeah, hope to see you soon in person again.
I hope so too. We will talk about the next events. If it's the Mexico and you are there, I will be there as well. So then it's quite soon.
Thank you.
And I hope to see many people, because Victoria as well for W3 is doing an amazing job. Yes. And the whole W3 vision is my favorite part of the Mexico. And I hope to see many people there. Also, if you are not into Web3 yet, I think you will see many projects, how they have been developing. And one last thing, I hope that this documentation from public television will continue, because we did it last year, and I talked to the guy because he's just fabulous. This was one of the best documentations I've done so far. I said, hey, let's do a follow-up on what has happened over 1.5 years. Oh, and I hope to see Philip again there too. What has happened, like, to all the projects, what are they doing now? And I think that would be so great to also have this documentary extended and then see what's going on.
Sure, that would be super interesting. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye.
My pleasure. Bye-bye. Bye. Love.